Hello and welcome to the Relationship Matters podcast. From the boardroom to the living room, we believe relationship matters. Hello, I'm your host, Katie Churchman. And in this episode, Master Coach Maddie Weinreich is back on the show talking about vitality for couples. There are all kinds of ways we can be in relationship with our partner. Sometimes it can be very dull to be in a couple, and other times it can be very exciting. Relationships are in cycles. In this episode, Maddie talks about relationship behavioural patterns that can help to foster more aliveness, engagement, and vitality. After 2 decades of working with couples, Maddie's noticed 5 recurring elements in couples with high levels of vitality. These 5 elements are autonomy, interdependence, constructive disagreement, intimacy, and vision. When couples have all of these things going on, there tends to be a good amount of engagement, aliveness, and vitality. So without further ado, I give you Maddie Weinreich. Well, Maddie, it's lovely to have you back on the show. So today we're talking about vitality for couples. So firstly, what do you mean when you say vitality?
Well, vitality is aliveness. So there are all kinds of ways we can be in relationship with our partner. And sometimes we just go along to get along, to do the best we can. And sometimes there's a high level of engagement, aliveness, I call it vitality. So yeah, it can be very exciting to be part of a couple. It can also be very dull to be part of a couple. We actually have a choice in where we are. And also, I think that couples go through different cycles in their relationship. There are times when they're connected and maybe connected to their original myth and they're in the groove. And then there are times when they fall apart and go apart and have different ways of being. And there's conflict often in relationships.
Oh, this is perfect timing, particularly for couples who've had maybe 8 months of lockdown together. I'm sure they're looking for some of that aliveness to come back.
Exactly, exactly. And they can do that. They can create that. So I worked with a think tank of a few couples coaches several years ago. And together we came up with some elements that live in couples that have this high level of aliveness, engagement, vitality, fun.
Brilliant.
And so it kind of distilled down to that.
Excellent. Oh, I'd love to hear the magic recipe for bringing this aliveness into the everyday. I think we could all do with a bit more of that.
Yeah. So we came up with these 5 elements. And so I'll just tell you the 5 elements and then maybe we can go back through and talk about them. So first is autonomy. Autonomy. Who are you as an individual? The second is interdependence. Constructive disagreement. Intimacy and vision. So autonomy, interdependence, constructive disagreement, intimacy, and vision. When couples have all of those things going on, there tends to be a good level of engagement, aliveness, and vitality.
That's really interesting because they're not necessarily the 5 I think that people would think of first and foremost. And yeah, I'm interested to deep dive into some of those particularly.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, this is a work in progress. Mm-hmm. So this isn't set. This isn't like what it is. I build on the work of John Gottman, Daniel Goleman, many thought leaders in the relationship world, especially of couples.
And what's interesting is they all seem to sit in the being space as opposed to what you're doing. I think a lot of pressure is put on people to do date night or to buy flowers. And actually all of those 5 pieces, they're much more about how you're being in relationship, which is very interesting.
You know, I think you have a really good point there. When the being is in place, then the doing can be good. And sometimes the doing can contribute to the being. So I like that you picked up on that. These are ways of being in relationship, in an intimate relationship, to have it thrive, to have it flourish, to have it blossom. So should we take a look at
them? Yeah.
You know, I want to say too that I'm looking also at the 5 principles that we're going to be talking about in ORSC. So I thought maybe we could have a conversation too that includes the 5 principles as we go through each of these elements that Great. Live in a vital, alive, engaged relationship.
That'd be great, because that's also a system, and it's the one that we probably work with the most and perhaps often the least skillfully. So I think that'll be a really lovely overlap, Maddie.
Yeah, that sounds cool. So we start with autonomy. Who am I? What's important to me? What lives in my land? It's also, you know, if we look at one of the five principles, there's this systems rely on deep democracy and holds every voice to be a voice of the system. So it's important to know, what is my voice? What do I feel? What do I want? What are my values? Who am I? That's where it starts. Relationship starts with self, and then we connect with other. So what lives in my land? We do this my land visualization in the geography course, and we get in touch with, well, what lives in my land? And then we go into a mansion, and what are the aspects of myself, and how am I connected with all those different parts of myself? What kind of relationship do I have with myself? What do I stand for? So this autonomy is really an important place. And sometimes when couples get into relationship, they let go of that sense of self and they're connected and everything depends on the other. But if you have a sense of who you are and what's important to you, then you have a voice in the system. Then you have something to contribute. Any thoughts that you have just about autonomy, about who am I?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I wasn't expecting you to go down that path. I was expecting you to say, oh, well, one of us, you know, watches the football on Sunday and the other, you know, goes for a walk. But actually, it's more of that deeper work that's going on there. And it reminds me of what a girlfriend said the other day about how she completely lost herself in a relationship. She kind of forgot who she was. And now she's in the process of building back who she is and who she wants to be in the world.
Yeah, you know, and I want to say it is partly about who's watching the football game and, you know, who's doing their nails. Like it's that too. It's really that too. But when we realize that we are responsible for our own happiness, that it's really not someone else's job to make us happy, that's where autonomy lives. It's about being myself. It's about our boundaries too.
So that's interesting. I guess you could take that beyond couples and into families, and you're thinking about parent-child dynamics. It's not someone's job to make the other happy, which is often at the source of so many conflicts.
For sure. And once we get that piece straightened out, like I'm responsible for my own happiness, then everything is different, because then I have a locus of control. This is what's important to me. Now, how we bring that into relationship, that's kind of the next piece where we get into this sense of interdependence. So there's me, there's my land, there's what I want, there's what I need, there's my values, there's all of that, who I am and who I'm becoming, because this is ongoing. We're always changing. We're always growing. We're not who we were 5 minutes ago or 5 days ago or 5 years ago. We're still becoming ourselves and growing. So that's kind of the first piece. And then we meet another person. You know, we interact. We have our partner, our intimate partner, our spouse, you know, if it is boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, whatever we call that person. And we want to see, well, what's happening in their land? Who are they? What do they bring? Now, sometimes when we go to interdependence, we feel like, oh, if I listen to what's going on with you, I have to give up what's important to me. That's a kind of a pit that people fall into. But you don't have to give up what you are to listen to and understand and really be there with the other person. So that's what Daniel Goleman calls that social intelligence, empathetic understanding for the other, where we find out, well, what's going on over there? And we're open to the influence of somebody else. We're open to the influence of our partner. So it's not about giving up our autonomy or giving up what's important in our land, but it's really about being open to the influence of what does the other person bring. And then together, we create a relationship. We create who we are together. And that, you know, takes us to that principle of each system forms its own unique identity. Every couple is different. Every couple has different qualities. Every couple has different strengths. Every couple has different challenges and different weaknesses. But the relationship between the two is unique. It really is who they are together. And that relationship changes also over time. As they develop as individuals, that autonomy piece, their relationship also develops into who they are becoming together. And I find that kind of exciting because every time I work with a couple, it's different. It's a new information that comes in. It's a different system that shows up in front of us. So what do you think of that?
Well, by trying to blend, I guess, which a lot of people, I think, end up doing, trying to be what the other person wants them to be, it's actually a disservice to what that third entity could actually be.
Yeah. It's like, how do we create from our differences? When we do in geography in the ORSC program, when we do lands work, there's my land, there's your land, and then there's our land. What do we create together? What do we consciously, if we consciously go and choose the best of our partner's land and then have a conversation about that, we each choose the best of our partner's land and we have a conversation about what lives in our land, what could we create together from the best of both? That's very different than how many of us generally create from the worst of what's happening with each other. You know, picking on each other and criticizing each other, that is normal in relationships. But what if we were to actually access the best of what lives in each land and to bring that together? So I find that fascinating and interesting. And, you know, when you start to do that, when you start to create from each other and create something new, there's probably going to be some conflict. There's probably going to be some differences that come up because creating from differences is interesting, but also it's something that we have to push against with our partner. So what happens when we have conflict? Now, John Gottman did a ton of research about couples and how they thrive. And what he found was there's a ratio of 5 positive to 1 negative interaction to have successful relationships that have resilience and bounce back and vitality as well. And so there are different ways to create that sense of that 5-to-1 ratio, positive to negative. And one way is to increase positivity, to give acknowledgments and appreciations. And it could be flowers and chocolates, as you mentioned earlier. You know, it could be those gestures. It could be a wink, a nod, a text, a bitmoji, you know, a little something. It doesn't have to be a lot. But just feeding that sense of positivity is really important. And he also talks about when couples get into conflict and that there are different ways of working with conflict. There are different behaviors that show up that are over time. We all do these things, but over time, they eat away at the integrity of the relationship. And so he named these 4 the 4 horsemen of the apocalypse for couples. So he looks to reduce those, but he also looks at increasing positivity during conflict by doing something like a softened startup, to arrange to have a conversation, a difficult conversation, rather than just jumping in with somebody. And another is repair bits. So it's offering an olive branch or saying, I'm sorry, or making a light joke during some conflict. So these are ways to increase positivity during conflict. So he talked about that, and then he talked about decreasing negativity during conflict. So these 4 behaviors that he discovered after doing a lot of research, studying a lot of couples over an extended period of time, is that if couples are critical and blame each other, if they're defensive, if they're stonewalling or contemptuous, that those behaviors tend to pull the relationship down and drag it down over time. Now, as I mentioned, we all do all of these things, but in order to have constructive conflict or creative conflict or constructive disagreement, couples need to become aware of these things. Is there one that they do? Is there one that they favor? Is one tend to be critical? Does one tend to stonewall? They do happen in relationship with each other. So that when you become aware of them and start to act a little bit differently, find another way of being, that you can actually use your disagreement, use your conflict in ways that can actually benefit the relationship. Because people need to air their differences. They need to say things differently. They need to have each other turn towards each other rather than turn away. So I just said a lot. I want to just kind of check in. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's so interesting that there is often this sense that arguing's bad and the amount you argue is bad. But this really talks to the fact that it's how you argue and, you know, what you make of that, what you take from that. And that's really important.
Yeah. You know, as I said, we all do all of these things. And it's really about recovery. How does a couple recover? If they've been building up that sense of positivity, that 5-to-1 ratio, it really creates a little bit of a cushion that you can recover from. So I know a lot of couples who fight really well. I've worked with hundreds of couples in terms of coaching and over the last 20 years. And the ones that fight really well and get through it are the ones that benefit from this constructive disagreement. And what they have is there's a sense of positivity, like they can bounce back. So building that nest of positivity is really important because you make a withdrawal when you have an argument. And how do you bounce back from it? Some couples don't fight very well and they just get into it, but they don't get through it. So the only way through it is through it. You can't stop short when you're having an argument. You've got to find your way to the other side. And that takes courage. It's not easy for couples to be able to get there. But with practice, they really can. Because with couples, and as with all relationships, they're in a constant state of emergence. You know, that's another one of the principles that I wanted to connect to, that there's always something that wants to emerge, that wants to come out to the other side. And so if you stay in the argument and really get in there and have the argument and have your autonomy, and this is what I believe, and I want to hear what you believe, and I want to have that conversation, I want to have that disagreement, because something new can come from that. If couples can hold to that, they can really get to the other side of it. And that argument, that difficulty, that disagreement, that conflict can actually be a spark for something new. So that's what I think is kind of exciting.
It makes me think of this couple I was coaching recently, young couple, and they were arguing a lot. They went through a lot of the OSC work with me, and they had this sense of, well, I don't think we'll ever argue again. We've like mastered relationship. And it really sort of reminds me of that sense of emergence. You know, things are going to change. You're never going to be this consistent couple in the world. And I think that's why you kind of have to stay on your toes a bit in relationship, because as soon as you sort of sit back, something will surprise you.
Yeah, that's right. And when we're coaching couples, now this can be really hard for coaches, because sometimes I think couples can be really intense in their arguments. They know how to push each other's buttons. They really know how to get in there. As a coach, there's a principle that we really have to hold to, which is that systems are naturally generative, intelligent, and creative. So if we can trust that without worrying that they're going to get into it with each other. Sometimes we'll think, oh, you know, I wasn't a good coach. I didn't do a great job. They're fighting when they hang up, you know, or they end the call or they end the session. We have to trust that they're naturally generative, intelligent, and creative, and that something will emerge. And that in that moment, there might be a real heat going on with a couple. And we might think, oh, they're going to fire us. And we come back to the next call thinking, oh, you know, I did this bad job coaching. And all of a sudden, they're in a completely different place, because things happen in relationship over time. There's a little shift that happened. Maybe there was some understanding that happened in that conversation and it took them somewhere else. So we have to trust that we can't fix relationships. We can't leave it all tied up in a bow. We can't leave it all nice and pretty. We have to trust that wherever the relationship is, that's where they need to be in that moment. And that can be really challenging for a couples coach or an OSC coach who's working with couples.
That's definitely the most challenging thing for me, because you almost feel like you know the answers as an outsider. You see sort of what they need. And of course, you don't know what they need. You're not in it. So if a couple is having a really messy argument on a coaching call, say, what would you offer them? Are you just going to sort of leave them in that spiral, or would you step in perhaps?
Well, if it's at the end of a session, we have to safe port them.
Okay.
So we have a conversation before the session ends, acknowledging that they're in a hot spot, you know, revealing to them, hey, this is really, you're in an intense place, or it sounds like there's a lot of upset there, because we reveal the system to itself. We tell them as coaches, this is what I see, this is what I hear, this is what I sense, this is what I feel is going on with you. And then we ask them to also report in about that. So what's it like for you to have this going on? And it could be, like I said, a hot spot. So when we finish this call, or when we finish this session, how do you want to be together with us? And we spend a little bit of time designing. So it could be that they're not going to talk about this topic for 24 hours. Or it could be whatever it is. If they're going to talk about it, they're going to maybe set a timer for 10 or 15 minutes. Or they're going to take a walk first. So we have a conversation just about the fact that this is normal, that couples have hot spots, that they get into it with each other, that they have this disagreement or conflict, that can be there. And how do they want to be together? So we use the designed partnership alliance before they hang up. It's really important before they end the session, because that's important that they have agreements about how they want to be together. So great question, and an important one. We don't just leave them there.
So I guess that's another way of having constructive conflict, because you're pausing if it's super hot and coming back to it when you're perhaps more level-headed.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, just taking that break can be really important, because sometimes people get flooded, especially if those toxins or those four horsemen of the apocalypse have been happening during a heated conversation. We have to stop and take a little bit of a break and then find better ways to communicate with each other. So, and that might be something we could come back and talk about, you know, maybe in another session, about those four toxins, what they are, do a deeper dive into those, and antidotes for those as well. That could be an interesting place to go. So when couples have this constructive disagreement and they've been interdependent, they're learning to be open to influence from each other, and they also come at this with a sense of autonomy of who I am, what's important to me, and how do I create my own happiness, often what happens is intimacy can form, you know, because there's a sense of trust. Like, I can have an argument with you, or I can be close to you, or I can be myself with you. I can hear what you have to say. We can express our differences and create something new from that. So all of that is creating a sense of aliveness in the relationship, and there's intimacy. So, you know, who are we together? What is intimacy? It's what that couple decides is intimacy, but it's also about, what are our rituals? What are the things we do together? It includes sexuality, sensuality, connection, warmth, nesting, all of those things. There's a wide range of what intimacy means for couples. And in that, there's, you know, I'm looking at the systems rely on roles to execute its functions. So even in intimacy, there are certain roles that each one plays that create an intimate life together. And that's always changing. We have the outer roles of who does what, and the inner roles of what's our dynamic together. And I think that inner roles really show up with couples in terms of the emotional functioning of a relationship that seems to live in the area of intimacy. So one might be an initiator. One might be the one who is supportive. There are different peacemaker, the one who stirs the pot or gets things going. So there are different roles that show up in an intimate relationship. And the more flexible we are with those roles, the more that both people can occupy those roles in different ways, the more range a relationship can have and the more fun that couples can have together.
That's really interesting with regards to intimacy sort of coming out of the first three of these principles. Are there ways in which we may want to shake up the roles? Because, you know, we might be perhaps bored by the way things are. Is that a way in itself of creating intimacy, shaking up the intimacy roles?
Absolutely. That is great. Yeah. Like distancer, pursuer. That's often some inner roles that show up in relationship. And so, you know, one person might be the one who is pursuing, who's initiating, who is making bids for connection, who wants to have things happen. And the other might be the one who, I don't know if I want to, I'm not ready yet, you know, pull away a little bit. And if you can switch those roles, and then the one who pulls away becomes the initiator in their way, and it might be different. And the other one might be a little bit reluctant or quiet and need to be convinced. That can create a real fun dynamic for couples in relationship.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I think that variety and trying on different roles and playing with that can be really fun. There's also aspects of ourself that show up in intimate relationships. So there might be a part of you that's, you know, a party girl that wants to show up in that relationship. Or there might be something like, you know, a teenager, a part of you that's a teenager that wants to show up in that relationship. And so there's opportunities in intimacy to be able to try on different ways of being and to explore and to express for couples.
That's interesting. So it's a way of really stretching your range or exploring the range that you don't often live in the day-to-day.
Yeah. And a couple, they get to decide what's romantic. What is romantic? It might be different for different couples. Because each couple is unique, each system is unique, intimacy is going to be unique for each couple. It's going to really depend on who they are and what it is that they want to have together, what that means. But all those things in place, knowing who I am, knowing who you are, knowing who we are together, being able to disagree to create from that often builds toward intimacy. And couples need to have a vision. They need to have a vision. Who are we together? Who do we want to become? What is it that we want to create together? And I don't know that couples often have that conversation about what's our vision? What are we going for? Who are we now? And who do we want to be in 5 years? And when we're older and, you know, looking back on our life, what is it that we want to be celebrating? So having a sense of vision and who are we together and what do we want to create, that's a really important part of relationship. It's an important conversation to have. And we have a tool that we use in ORS called Bringing Down the Vision, where we do a little mini visualization and we have the couple draw their relationship. Like, what's a picture of your relationship? If your relationship was a creature or a being, what would it look like? How would it move? What are its strengths? What are its weaknesses? What does it need? And so we kind of go to that other level of reality and explore the vision of the relationship and see, what is it? What is that creature that is our relationship? What is it? What does it need? What does it want? And then how can we do that? How can we bring that into our life together? And how can we live that vision? So there are all kinds of ways to vision. That's one of the ways is one of our tools from the PATH program. So that all those things together, and there's so many things we can work on as systems coaches in terms of those different elements that create relationship vitality, we can enter anywhere. It isn't like you have to start in one place and go to another. You could start with a vision, like what is it that we want to be? And you can jump around in different areas. But touching on those different areas and bringing that alive for couples really helps them to explore their relationship more. Who are we? Where are we going? What do we want?
It's kind of interesting that we don't do it really when we have executive coaching or life coaching for individuals. And yet as couples, it's not something we think of typically. And my husband and I actually went through it this year. I kind of thought going through the motions, but it was hugely helpful to decide who we want to be in the world and what we want to create. Because, you know, after getting married and moving to America in 4 months, we'd sort of sat back, hadn't really sort of thought too much about where we want to be. And I think there's so much to that intentionality in relationship that often gets lost because of all the doing. And I think 2, 3, 4 years can go by and you're like, how are we here? So I'd recommend it to any couple, regardless of how healthy or unhealthy their relationship is. I think it really creates a sense of direction and purpose.
Yeah. And, you know, some couples are what we call meta couples. They're couples that do big work in the world. And so sometimes couples work together. So they're not just a couple, or they're parents. You know, that makes them a meta couple. They're contributing to the evolution of the next generation. Or maybe a couple is in business together, or they work together. I think of couples like Michelle and Barack Obama. Right? So they're a couple, but they're also a meta couple. They're doing work in the world. They're showing up as a couple. Or Bill and Melinda Gates, I was thinking about them as we came in, and they're philanthropists and they're contributing in a great way. They're not just a couple. They're doing something else. Faith and Marita, our founders, you know, they're a meta partnership. They're doing something in the world. They're not just partners. They're contributing and delivering something. So I think in ways, every couple is a meta couple. And just to look at what is it that they're contributing just as being a couple, as a model for others. Maybe it's for their children or their neighbors or their family. But if they're being conscious and intentional in relationship, what's the impact on other people? Like you just said, what if we were intentional about how we wanted to be as a couple? I believe that there's a power that the couple has that's greater with them together than them as individuals. There's something that we can do as a couple that I think we can tap into. There's a kind of energy, there's a support, there's guidance, there's something there that I believe we can create something very special as couples. And I think it's untapped potential. I think some of us tap into it occasionally, like by mistake, but we can actually tap into that consciously and intentionally.
Wow, that's beautiful. I really thought, you know, the energy of that, the couple, the relationship, you know, it helps when it comes to conflict. But when you think about the wider world and the impact that the couple can consciously have, that's really empowering, I think, for partnerships, for couples to think that they can have that in the world if they take a moment to think about it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we use meta skills. It's an attitude, philosophy, or stance that the coach takes. But when couples learn how to use a meta skill to address an issue or an event or how they're going to be together, and they get conscious and they think, well, let's bring the meta skill of heart to this conversation, or let's bring the meta skill of rigor if there's something that they really want to accomplish. Setting those intentions and creating a field with what it is that they want to do can be much more powerful than people realize. That intentionality is so important.
Wow. Thank you, Maddie. This was really fascinating. Thank you, Maddie. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Maddie for introducing us to her five elements for relationship vitality. These five elements can help couples to explore and consider who they are in relationship and who they want to be in relationship, so that they can consciously create more relationship vitality. My key takeaways are as follows. Number one, autonomy. If you have a sense of who you are and what's important to you, then you have a voice in the system. You have a voice to contribute. Number two, interdependence. You don't have to give up who you are to really be with and listen to the other person. It's about being open to the influence of what the other person brings. Number three, constructive disagreement. You can actually use your disagreements and conflicts in ways that can benefit the relationship if we can turn towards and continue to build a bank of positivity. Number four, intimacy. What does intimacy mean to us? What are our rituals? And what are the things that we do to create an intimate life together? And number five, vision. Couples need to have a vision about who they are and who they want to become. What is it that we want to create together? To find out more about Maddie's work, do check out crrglobal.com. And make sure you subscribe to the Relationship Matters podcast wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you never miss an episode. From the boardroom to the living room, we believe relationship matters.